Welcome to the deep dive. You know the drill. We take a complex topic, wade through the details, and pull out the crucial stuff for you.
Yeah, make it make sense.
Exactly. So today we're diving deep into a really foundational case in corporate law, Beard v. Elster. It's from 1960.
A
A
classic.
classic indeed. Think of this as your shortcut, sort of, to understanding a key Delaware Supreme Court decision. It really continues to shape how we look at stock option plans and the power corporate directors have.
Right. By the end of this, you should have a really clear grasp of the main principles from Beard and, why it still matters.
Okay, let's get into it.
Absolutely. This case, it isn't just some dusty old ruling. It really set the stage for how courts decide if stock options are like legitimate ways to motivate employees or if they're maybe just improper giveaways of company money.
Okay, so let's jump right into the core question, the central thing the Delaware Supreme Court was wrestling with here.
Good place to start.
All right, so the heart of the issue, it revolved around these stock option plans at American Airlines back in the early 50s.
Right. There were two plans, 1950 and 1952, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And together they set aside like 250,000 shares for employees. But some shareholders weren't happy. They sued back in 52.
And their argument was.
Pretty simple, really. They basically said these options were just a gift of corporate assets. Why? Because, well, they argued the company wasn't getting enough value back in return, that key legal thing, lack of valid consideration.
And, that wasn't a totally crazy argument back then. The whole idea of stock options was still kind of evolving legally.
Right.
And there were earlier cases like Curbs v. California Eastern Airways.
Yeah.
That one took a much tougher line, suggesting these plans needed really close examination to make sure the corporation was actually getting something concrete.
Definitely. So, given that backdrop, what did the first court, the lower court, decide?
Well, that's a key part of the story. The vice chancellor actually agreed with those shareholders who were suing.
He did. Wow.
Yeah. He looked at precedents like Curbs and basically said, yep, these American Airlines options don't have enough consideration. They're invalid.
Whoa. Imagine that a major airline stock plan just tossed out by the court.
Huge implications. So naturally, it set things up for an appeal.
Makes sense.
And that's what happened. It went up to the Delaware Supreme Court and they flipped the decision, reversed the lower court.
Okay, and this is where it gets really important for understanding current law, right? Because they didn't just say the vice chancellor was wrong.
Exactly. They actually laid out a whole new standard, a test for how to evaluate these kinds of stock option plans.
Okay, let's break down that test. It's basically two parts, right? This is super fundamental for anyone studying corporate law.
Absolutely. Two key parts.
Just part one.
Part one is that the corporation has to have a reasonable expectation of getting some kind of benefit from the plan.
Okay, so there needs to be a business reason. Like, why are we doing this?
Precisely. Why give away potentially valuable stock? There needs to be a solid business rationale behind it.
And the most common one is.
Usually, it's about keeping key employees around, retention. Companies spend a lot on finding and training good people.
Makes sense.
And stock options can be a really powerful carrot to keep them from leaving, keep them contributing long term.
Right, which leads us straight into the second part of the test.
It does. Part two requires a reasonable relationship between the value of the options you're giving out and the benefit the company reasonably expects to get back.
So it can be totally lopsided. You can't give away the farm for like maybe retaining one mid-level manager for 6 months.
Exactly. There needs to be some kind of balance, some proportionality. The value given shouldn't be wildly out of sync with the expected return or benefit.
Okay, got it. Reasonable expectation of benefit and reasonable relationship between option value and that benefit. So, how did the court apply that test to American Airlines? What made them say, no, these options are actually valid?
Well, they looked closely at how the American Airlines plans were structured. And a really crucial detail was that employees couldn't just cash in immediately. They had to stay with the company for a certain period before they could exercise their options.
Ah, so vesting periods.
Right, vesting. The court saw that requirement having to stick around as a clear, tangible benefit for the corporation. American was directly incentivizing people to stay. That helps with stability, keeps knowledge in-house.
Okay.
And crucially, the evidence actually showed that most employees who got these options did stay with American Airlines.
So, proof in the pudding, essentially.
Kinda, yeah. The court saw it as real-world evidence that the plan was working as intended, achieving that retention goal.
Okay, this feels like a good time to bring in the business judgment rule because that played a huge part here, didn't it? Can you explain why?
Absolutely massive part. The business judgment rule is like a bedrock principle in corporate law. Basically, it means courts generally won't second-guess business decisions made by a company's board of directors in good faith.
Especially if the directors don't have a personal stake.
Exactly. Particularly when the directors are disinterested, meaning they aren't standing to gain personally from the decision in a way that's different from other shareholders. And in the Beard case, the American Airlines board that approved these plans, largely disinterested.
Okay, so they weren't just feathering their own nests.
Right.
Yeah.
And the court really leaned on this. Justice Wolcott wrote this famous line, something like, "We're precluded from substituting our uninformed opinion for that of experienced business managers."
Powerful quote.
It really sums it up. It shows the court's reluctance, its deference, to the expertise of the people actually running the company.
So unless you can show something really wrong, like fraud or bad faith, or the directors clearly messing up their duties, the court's generally going to step back and say, that was a business decision for the board to make. They were elected for that purpose. They're presumed to know the business better than a judge.
Right. And this point about the disinterested board, that was a major reason why Beard came out differently than that earlier Curbs case, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Critical distinction. What was the key difference that let the Supreme Court say, okay, Curbs doesn't control here?
Tell us.
Well, in Curbs, the directors who approved the stock options, they were also the main people getting the options.
Ah, self-interest.
Big time. That immediately raises red flags about conflicts of interest, about whether they were really acting in the company's best interest, fulfilling their fiduciary duties, specifically the duty of loyalty.
Okay.
But in Beard, you had a mostly disinterested board. And another really important factor, the shareholders themselves had actually voted to approve the plans. Shareholder ratification.
So not only did the impartial board approve it, but the owners of the company, the shareholders, also gave it the thumbs up.
Exactly. That adds a whole other layer of legitimacy and protection for the board's decision.
That makes a lot of sense. And didn't the court also say something interesting about how consideration could be shown even after the fact?
Yes, that's another really neat part of the ruling. The court basically said, look, even if at the exact moment the options are granted, you could argue the benefit to the company is a bit uncertain.
Uh-huh.
If the employees subsequently stay with the company, perform well, contribute value, that later performance and continued employment can actually provide the necessary consideration.
Retroactively, almost.
Yeah, in a way. Justice Wolcott put it very clearly. Lapse of time and performance will supply consideration. So the actual results mattered.
That feels very practical. It's not just about the legal paperwork at the start, but about what actually happened, the real-world benefits the company got over time.
Exactly. It shows the court wasn't just stuck on technicalities. They were looking at the ongoing relationship and the actual value generated.
Okay. So thinking bigger picture then, Beard v. Elster really highlights how much procedural fairness matters in these corporate decisions, doesn't it?
Definitely. The court gave significant weight to the process. Was the decision made by a disinterested board? Did the shareholders get a say and approve it? Those procedural steps really strengthened the case for upholding the board's judgment.
Right. So for the law students listening, what's the big takeaway here? If you're faced with a situation involving stock options and you think something's wrong, where should your focus be based on Beard?
The key lesson from Beard is this. If you want to challenge a stock option plan effectively, your best bet is usually to look for conflicts of interest among the directors who approved it.
Like self-dealing.
Exactly. Or look for serious flaws in the approval process itself. Was information hidden? Was there no proper vote? That kind of thing.
Because just arguing, this seems like too much money, or I don't think this was a smart business move.
That's going to be really tough if the decision was made by a disinterested board acting in good faith. The business judgment rule provides strong protection there. You need to show a breach of fiduciary duty, not just disagreement with the business strategy.
Got it. So focus on the duty of loyalty, potential conflicts, or major procedural screw-ups, rather than just questioning the board's business sense.
That's generally the stronger path. And just to hammer home those two key requirements from Beard one last time.
Go for it.
One, reasonable expectation of corporate benefit, usually retention or performance. Two, reasonable relationship or proportionality between the option value and that expected benefit. Keep those two locked in.
Okay, great summary. So Beard v. Elster really a landmark decision. It clarified how Delaware courts look at stock options, emphasized the power of the business judgment rule for disinterested directors, and set up that two-part test focused on expected benefit and proportionality.
Couldn't have said it better. It moved away from just looking at consideration at the moment of the grant and acknowledged that ongoing employee performance matters. And that focus on process disinterested board shareholder approval is still super relevant in corporate governance today.
Absolutely. Okay, so here's a final thought to leave everyone with, something to chew on. We've seen how Beard set the stage back in 1960. How do you think that balance between using options to incentivize employees and protecting shareholders has shifted or evolved since then?
Good question.
You know, think about today's world. Executive compensation is way more complex now. There are constant debates about how much CEOs make. Do the core principles from Beard v. Elster still give us useful ways to think about these modern challenges? Or are we dealing with totally new issues?
Definitely something worth pondering as you dive deeper into corporate law.
Indeed. Thanks for joining us on The Deep Dive.